Good evening. I don't know if it's quiet because my ears are plugged or it's just quiet. I'd like to call the October 4th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chaff will be arriving later this evening. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAfee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Frodo?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
I would like to ask for an executive session at the end of this legislature meeting to discuss labor negotiations. Is there any member of the public here who'd like to address us tonight? I don't see anybody. All right. Legislators? Frank?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Sorry, Martha, I couldn't pass that up. Consumer moment. If you haven't opened your NYSEG bill yet, you'll be surprised, or maybe you won't, that there's a rate increase for electricity and natural gas. And believe it or not, that's not, oh, Peter left because I was going to ask him for some help. There's a phrase in here that I need a little clarification on because I'm confused. This is what the rate increase notice looks like. It's in your bill. It reads, that they are increasing 27.8 million dollar increase in electricity revenue and $2.4 million increase in natural gas revenue. Here's the quote. The natural gas revenue increase, maybe David can help me with this. The natural gas revenue increase reflects the removal of costs associated with the sale of the Seneca Gas Storage Facility approved by the Commission earlier this year. What's puzzling me is, how can you have an increase if your cost goes down because the cost for the gas storage facility has been removed and it generated a sale price? This statement seems redundant. Well, not redundant. It doesn't read like good English here. Let me read it again. The natural gas revenue increase reflects the removal of costs. If you remove costs, doesn't your bottom line change? I always thought so. The costs associated with the sale of the Seneca Gas Facility approved by the Commission earlier this year. So they're raising rates because their costs went down. That one is a puzzle to me. And that's my consumer minute for today.
Thank you, Frank. Let's see if anybody has an answer. Brian?
No, I don't have an answer for that. My logic doesn't think that way. But I'm hoping that everyone could join me. There's been a couple of things. One, the supervisor in the town of Groton, Glenn Morey, he and his wife, Jean, lost their son this week to cystic fibrosis, very long battle with that. He's the supervisor and also I believe he's a member of TCOG. Is that right? So if your thoughts could be with them, and, of course, our own Joe Mariana and his family over your loss of your father-in-law.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you very much, Brian. And I was going to say as part of my report, but I should add now that Harris Dates passed away and just this past week, and he was long a member of this body and chair of this body as well. And several people are working, Frank and others are working on a resolution that we can pass that sort of records his some of his achievements in a resolution that we can consider and vote on next at our next meeting. So just want to recognize his passing as well. Thanks, Brian. Will?
Thank you, Margaret. Last Thursday, I attended the regional forum sponsored by the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council, which I know several other of us were also there. And I wanted to just express both a sense that I was pleased that our community turned out and was so concerned about issues of economic development. I mean, there were probably 130, 150 people into the soon to be leaving us Women's Community Building meeting room. But unfortunately, the meeting itself I found quite disturbing in the sense that it was long PowerPoint and then quick breakout sessions to discuss the eight different areas. And, you know, there was very, very little real chance to discuss anything, and then a quick report back. And what was disturbing to me was that this was presented as our attempt at a public input. And I realized that Martha and Nathan and a number of other people from our community are going to the working groups, which is, I think, critically important and where the real work is. But from my perspective, the public input portion of this process was not what it needed to be. And I would hope that our government could be doing better.
I was going to talk about that in my report, but I might as well follow up now. I've gotten a number of emails from folks who had similar concerns as yours. Well, admittedly, the public process isn't perfect. The PowerPoint was too long. I think that, you know, the person who gave it, Kevin McLaughlin, is not usually sort of in front of the microphone. He's usually behind the scenes. So I don't think he was that comfortable doing that. There's too much detail, et cetera, that people couldn't really focus on. But in comparison to the way funding has been divvied up in the past, this is much more transparent. I mean, in the normal course of things, applicants send in their proposals to state agencies and they get, you know, approved or rejected, and there's no public comment. There's no sense of a regional strategic plan and priorities developed by anybody in the region from where the applicant is from. So I think that there's, you know, we will get copies of everything that was written up on those breakout reports. I will get the emails from everybody who signed up. And I would like to try to figure out some way that we can move forward, you know, as a county. I mean, regardless of what happens with the sort of money chase in the with Albany, I'd like to follow up with that interest and energy from the local community and figure out a way to develop the ideas further. So I know people were frustrated. There was just too much material for people to receive and then supposedly comment on. You know, if there's another session like that, I think this was the last one of the series. If we do another series like that, I would certainly be more proactive about, I mean, I did offer my help leading up to it, but I'd be a little more assertive and say, why don't we do it this way and try to make it more engaging then. So thank you. And I really appreciate everybody who came. Pat?
I don't happen to have the address, the email, the website address with me. I don't know if you do, Martha, or not, but I would also point out that there is a website that you can go to offer written comment to the regional councils as well. So there is that opportunity also for public input.
It's nyworks.ny.gov, and there's contact, there's a phone number, and then you click on another line, and there's an email address, which is longer, and I can't remember that, but it's ny, www.nyworks.ny.gov. Anyone else? Legislator comment? Dooley?
This is to announce three publicly available workshops if one wants to become familiar with the use of Frack Tracker to map whatever you're interested in about fracking in this area. One will be Tuesday, October 18th. One is Tuesday, October 25th. Those are both 6 to 8:30. And one is Wednesday, October 26th from 3 to 5:30. I can't tell you where it is, but I can give this information to staff, and I hope that they can make available updated information, which is more useful than just dates. It will include a place, too.
Oh, we had finished, Lee. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Mike?
Frank, on the NYSEG bill, my favorite one lately is about 75 cents. It's a billing charge that they, plus, which is also taxed. And I just think it's just terrific that we have a public service commission that allows the people to be, or allows our utilities to charge the customer for preparing and servicing their bills. I remember quite a few years ago, expose on 60 Minutes about some law firms in California that were not doing what they ought to. And one of the things that they were criticized for was charging for time to prepare their bills. Well, here the Public Service Commission is allowing what should be a corporate function, a corporate cost, to be charged to the people who are the customers. And we just allow these charges to just keep building up, and that's wrong. They've taken the public out of public service up there. Also, this past week, we saw an attempt to grab money from the counties by the state, thanks to Aurora Valenti, our county clerk, who brought it to my attention. And fortunately, I know the county the chair and our county administrator were aware of this also, but they were trying at the state level, the state DMV, to capture more money away from the counties for processing various things. And what they did was to say that people could self-certify whether or not their eyesight met the standards as required by Department of Motor Vehicles. So what that meant was that people would not have to come in and do eye tests or have their own doctors give them a certificate of their eye test. And that meant that state DMV wouldn't have to have as many people come through the local county offices for that service. That means the counties would lose about 12.5% of the fee for the renewal of the driver's license. That was improper because not only was it a shift of the money from the counties to the state, but it would have also meant that the public safety would not have been protected because there have been people out there who shouldn't be having driver's licenses or should have corrective lenses or something like that. Fortunately, the hubbub came very quickly, and the state and Governor Cuomo in particular backed off on that, so I'm glad to see that's not going forward. But it's one more example. Barbara Fiala, the Commissioner of Motor Vehicles, former county executive from Broome, I'm just very surprised that she would propose that to us counties. And the other thing they're starting to look at again is the highway lockbox trust fund at the state level, where there's about $3.5 billion that comes into that, and it's not being used for the rebuilding of bridges and highways the way it should be. About a third of that is used to pay for operations at Department of Motor Vehicles. Remember, many of the offices downstate are state offices, not county offices. And the other big part is debt service. The purpose of this fund was to pay as you go, but what they did was borrow, and now the debt service is larger than the amount of money left to actually do building in that fund. So that's something else to look at the state level.
Thank you, Mike. Peter.
Just to join Mike in his praise of the government that we have in Albany, at the NYSAC meeting, I learned another little story. I guess we all know that there's a surcharge, I forget exactly how much it is, $1, $1.25 or something on cell phones. And the point of that surcharge is so that local governments can extend the infrastructure that's necessary to have a 911 service. And in fact, that fund, which is dedicated to that, has been raided by the state to such an extent that I am told, or was told at the NYSAC meeting, that the federal government will no longer give grants to local governments to increase their infrastructure because the state is so much raiding the money that's put aside for that purpose.
I didn't realize that because Lee Shirtless has been very good at getting federal grants to support our communication system. Okay. Anyone else? Frank.
Mike, did you want to say something about the Civil War Commission's next event? I think it's coming up on Friday, the lecture.
The lecture was last night.
Was last night.
Yeah, it got moved because of the scheduling for the speaker. It was originally been planned for the 10th. It got moved to the 3rd. Had a wonderful lecture last night from Dr. Margaret Washington of Cornell University. Did a terrific job. We had over 50 people that came, and she talked on the efforts for emancipation, and sort of the title of her speech was Lincoln needed a little push to get to the point where he actually gave the Emancipation Proclamation. She talked about the upstate connection up here starting with John Brown, who was from upstate New York initially, and talking about Sojourner Truth, who she'd written a book about, as well as Frederick Douglass, who was from Rochester, as we know, and Harriet Tubman from Auburn. It was a nice lecture.
Thank you. Frank, you want to prompt anybody else? Okay, that it? And I think, speaking of lectures, I think Carol is right now at a lecture at Cornell by Ian Urbina, a New York Times columnist who's written an important series on gas drilling. So I was sorry that conflict happened, but that was something else that's already that's also going on today. So as far as my report, I would piggyback on some things that Peter said about NYSAC. It was an interesting conference in Lake Placid. People were very complimentary of Essex County, of the people who'd made all sorts of things happen to get their roads and bridges ready for outsiders to come in. They had some terrible damage. From Hurricane Irene, I think one of the most important sessions I went to actually was a meeting of the chairs, executives, and administrators. That was where we talked about Senate Bill 5889, and I'll put this on the mailboxes out there. The Legislative Gazette: Senate Bill would shift Medicaid costs to state. Steve Aquario and his staff have succeeded in getting legislation written, Senate Bill 5889B, and introduced by two senators and Republican senators and a Democratic assemblywoman, that would, over a period of 8 years, shift the costs of Medicaid entirely to New York State. And it would start in 2012 with a hard freeze instead of a freeze on the growth, but a hard cap. For 2012, and most of the costs, or sort of the heaviest burden of cost to be shifted to the state, would happen later in that 8-year period, so that they could ramp up to it. When you look at the cost, dividing the cost over 8 years, it's a manageable item, especially when you consider the Affordable Care Act funding that will come in and help fund Medicaid in New York State. That discussing that legislation, which of course NYSAC wants us to lobby for, led to an even more aggressive conversation about, well, what are we going to do about this cap? And most counties, I will say, are in far worse shape than we are. Greg Edwards, who was the lieutenant governor candidate for the Republican Party last term, he's the Chautauqua County executive, in fact, said that he's, in fact, I understand from a message I received today, he's proposing a tax levy of more than 12% for Chautauqua County because of the mandates he's got to pay for. And he was just, he was on a tear. I mean, about what kind of damage this is doing, the fact that the state hasn't taken over any mandates from the counties, even though that was the promise. So there was quite a bit of conversation about what can we do. And, you know, among the ideas, and I like this one the best, was the idea that we budget for Medicaid, but as of January 1st, we don't send the checks there. We don't send the checks to New York. And we say we will start paying our weekly share when they pass Senate Bill 5889B. So I've talked about that with Joe. He gulped. I got a message today from Gene McPheeters, who had gotten a message from the Chautauqua County Chamber of Commerce. They're supporting Edwards in sort of a pretty aggressive demand that the state take over Medicaid and take over as the first of the many mandates, but the biggest of the mandates. So I hope this is something you're going to hear more about. I haven't. I think we need a critical mass. It's not enough to have two counties do it. But I think we're faced with a situation where Albany did something radical to us, and if we don't respond in kind, it will be clear that we've absorbed what they wanted us to absorb, that we've absorbed the mandates within the tax cap. Or that we took the political heat and overrode the tax cap in our local county. So I think we need to step up and take some more clear and united action regarding this issue. And I'll get back to you on that. But it was a very, very energized discussion among the leaders, the county leaders who were at that meeting. So. Last week, it will.
Martha, I was just wondering, talking with other leaders, whether you got any sense how many other counties are considering an override to the tax cap?
I don't know at this point. Some are later than, many are later than us in the process. If they have an executive form, they're mostly just getting their budgets now. Peter?
Just to respond, every time I sat down at a table with someone new, I asked them that question. And if, according to my data, it's 100%.
Are going to override?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I think they probably all need to. I don't know whether they will. Last week I was in Albany for the governor. The governor called everybody there who was on the Economic Development Councils. A series of workshops, but also a keynote speech by President Clinton, and big announcement by Governor Cuomo about the, you've probably read about the $4.4 billion investment by Intel and other high-tech companies for the 450-millimeter chip. Is that right, Peter?
Yeah.
Okay. which is a big deal, and it's good for New York. But it's one kind of economic development. It's pretty top-down. You know, 6,900 jobs is great for those communities. I hope that our council, and I think our council will, propose a combination of bottom-up as well as top-down kinds of proposals, things that can benefit a broad range of residents in our region, as well as, you know, specific communities because of high-tech investment. There was a reception at the end of the day at the governor's mansion, and in my 20 seconds with the governor, I said, so congratulations on your deal. It was a great day today. Now, what are you going to do for counties? We have Senate Bill 5889. You really need to follow through on your promise about mandate relief. And he laughed, of course, and said, well, that's a lot of money. I said, I know how much money it is. You know, we're paying it. And, you know, and it matters which pocket it comes from. And 49 other states figure it out, you know, so that counties aren't paying for it. And, of course, he chuckled, and then it was time for me to move on. But security came through, yeah. No, we were smiling. It looked good from the outside. So we have a lot of work to do. Steve Aquario does seem to think that he's making some headway with the budget staff, and that's good, but the governor still needs to hear from people on this and not think that it's gone away. A couple of dates coming up. October 15th, Saturday. We are having a number of people have organized a second forum on how to comment on the DSGEIS on gas drilling. It'll be Saturday, 1 o'clock to 3:30 at the Women's Community Building, October 15th. We had a similar forum back in July. It was comment helping to bring people up to speed on the first part of the document. This will include this session will include Chip Northrup, Barbara Lifton, and Ed Marks, and a couple of other speakers. So October 15th, 1 o'clock in Women's Community Buildings. And there is an effort to organize another hearing, a local hearing on as part of the comment period through TCOG at the State Theater. And it looks like we will try to organize that, try to schedule that for December 1st. And this will be a time when we, as we had back in 2009, give people a chance to make verbal comments and submit written comments. And we've already invited DEC to send a regional representative to listen. We do need to have a court stenographer there to make those official comments that then they will add to their record. And so that's being organized now. So those are just a couple of dates coming up. Any other questions? All right, that's my report. Thank you. Joe, County Administrator's report.
I don't have a report tonight, so I pass.
Jonathan Wood, County Attorney.
This may be the first day ever that my report is longer than his. I was going to go with no report, but now I got to say something. Now, the only thing I wanted to let people know is that we got yet another settlement check in what they call the AWP litigation, which is the average wholesale price, which is the multi-county lawsuit against the drug companies for overcharging the counties on drugs used for Medicaid. This check was only $519.11, but we're getting near the end where there are only four or five companies left, and we're settling with each one as it goes. And I don't know the exact figure, but so far we've made about $50,000 on the lawsuit. So, and I expect it'll be a good chunk more than that before it's over. But it's winding up, and it's turned out to be a worthwhile thing. And that's my report.
Thanks, Jonathan. Any other questions? David Squire, Finance Director.
Apparently, the pressure from NYSAC has got the state thinking. You know, they don't want to shortchange us. So today, I put on your desk the 2 cents they sent us. Literally, 2 cents.
2 cents? What?
2 cents. We got 2 cents today in the mail.
How much did it cost them to send the check?
Now, so we're getting our money's worth. Don't ever say didn't get 2 cents worth in New York State. We got the property tax cap and our 2 cents worth. I wanted to report that our audit report has just been released. I'll give it to the clerk. I have a copy for every member outside. It is a positive report. From audit reports, you want a clean audit opinion. We have a clean audit opinion. Our general fund balance went up by about a little under $4 million. I wish I could say our cash went up by the same amount, but the fund balance went up. So I think it'll reflect well on us in the future. Now, October is also the month of the notice of foreclosures are distributed 1st of October, and people are, so we've been, it is an indicator of whether there's stress in the local community and the housing community, and we've been in one, you know, our financial statements are stable, and the foreclosure information, the number of properties annually exposed to foreclosure are always around 150 properties. This year, 145 properties are exposed. So that's a good sign. There's a lot of money outstanding that will be coming in as people will find ways to come in and pay off their taxes in order to avoid that action. But I wanted to point out there are two problem cases that are not new. One, the two largest tax delinquencies, one in the residential side is Missouri Farms, and that's been a constant problem. It's very valuable property in Newfield, but it's been there before. The other one, I'm sorry to say, is the nursing home that was filed bankruptcy, and that property has taxes of $329,000, which means that two-thirds of that the county has advanced to the school district and the town of Ithaca as a result of that. So we're out $200,000 plus that we didn't put in our budget. Hopefully, you know, and the story is always that New York State's going to adjust their Medicaid rates to allow them to pay off this amount. But if you read, there hasn't been a lot of adjusting in Medicaid. There's been constant pressure on reducing payments to nursing homes, so I don't know what's going to happen there. So, that's my report.
Thank you, David. Are there any questions? Julie.
This isn't a question. I forgot something during legislative time. Could I say something now?
Yeah, hold on, Jim.
David, I would be interested in your quick opinion on that. Martha made an announcement that about Medicaid withholding funds and not mailing it in. I mean, what would your sense of that be?
The problem with payments, we send money electronically to New York State weekly shares of $200,000 plus every week. And they send us 2 cents today, nothing yesterday, you know, $79,000 the next day. And so all I have to do is say, stop sending us money. So, I mean, it's really, we don't have any leverage there withholding payments. You know, there's more, I know one of the actions I thought was very proactive when they had a situation where the state wasn't reimbursing for prisoners, for county prisoners, is the threat of taking the prisoners and dropping them off on the state property. That's more of an action that you can get away with.
I don't think we can drop Medicaid claims off.
I've been getting some emails though about the property tax cap and some of the mandates. Well, you know that with the community colleges, they allowed substantial tuition increases for community colleges, and it's a direct result of that. Counties that don't have their own community colleges are seeing like 30-40% increases in the fees they have to pay because all the community college rates are being increased dramatically. And it depends on which community college you're subject to. I don't know what our rate went up by, but some of the ones in the Western saying they were getting hit with like 50% increases. And like, for example, in Tioga County, they pay more annually in community college chargebacks than we pay to support our community college. You know, because it's the way they share the burden. So, but the complaint, well, this is an unfunded mandate that they have to address within the property tax cap.
The Oneida County was the one that last July stopped sending their weekly shares. Isn't that right?
I think so. Yeah.
Look, I wouldn't propose this until I've got a lot more information, but the executive from Oneida was in this meeting. And, you know, at the end, it got some press. There was no penalty. They ended, you know, the money got exchanged in the end. There was no penalty. I would not suggest that we do this alone, but I think that if, you know, two-thirds, let's say, of counties in New York State just stop sending in Medicaid money, they'd have to pay attention to that. And if, especially if we had some legislators on board, maybe that would fast-track that bill, and, you know, then we'd go back to doing business. So I just throw it out there as something to think about. But I'm glad to hear what David's comments on it. Anything else for David? Dooley?
Thank you. I forgot to mention that tomorrow afternoon, Wednesday at 4:30 in Bank Alley downtown, there will be a gathering of residents of the county who are in support of the demonstrations that are going on in Wall Street, trying to acknowledge what Wall Street did to Main Street. And nationwide, there are being held similar demonstrations. Ithaca's is tomorrow at 4:30 at Bank Alley.
Thank you, Dooley. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, I'll read through the consent agenda. If anybody has anything to be pulled off, just say so. Resolution A, 2011 assessment roll footings. Resolution B, 2011 equalization rate. Resolution C, scheduling a public hearing on the 2012 Tompkins County budget and the 2012-2016 Tompkins County capital program. Resolution D, budget adjustment health department for WIC. That one's revised. My folder ended up in the other room, the revised version. Is there a motion? That's a motion, Kathy? And seconded by Will. All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. So I would like to go to Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Government Operations Committee has not met since our last legislature meeting. We will meet again on October 20th at 9:30.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? All right.
Can I just say, too, that we just passed the annual footings resolution on the consent agenda. And on your desk are the footings.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam McAsee, Chair.
Thank you. The EDAC will meet tomorrow at 3:30 in the old jail. We have not met since we had our last legislature meeting.
All right, thank you. Jim, I, in deference to one of our members not being here and the only action item left for us, Carol has said she would be here by 6:30. Would you mind moving your report and resolution to later in the meeting?
No, I would not.
All right.
No, I would not.
All right, well, let's do that. Might as well put you last, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yes, Public Safety Committee met yesterday, and we talked about, we don't much talk about anything except money on the Public Safety Committee. And whenever we talk about money, it looks bad. We heard about various changes that are going on at the state level, which will inflict financial pressure on the budget of those departments that are involved in public safety. There's the assigned counsel issue. The chief judge of the court system is insisting now that every poor person who is arraigned has a right to counsel at his or her arraignment. That has not been the practice in the past, and that apparently will be the practice in the future. How much that is going to affect us is in dispute. I know Joe thinks it will be less painful than the rest of the assigned council staff think, but the difficulties of providing an assigned council for people in the middle of the night when they're arraigned in a rural court is obviously going to cost us a lot of money. What was even which will cost us even more money is apparently the the fact that they're going to change the rules about when it is you cannot be prosecuted as an adult for 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. Apparently, New York is the only state in the union which allows 16, 17, and 18-year-olds to be prosecuted as adults. And that is going to change, and that means a lot of money because the sentencing for 16, 17, and 18-year-olds who are convicted of felonies will be very much more expensive if they are going to be tried as juveniles. One thing I learned at the NYSAC conference is that there is currently a movement which apparently will reach fruition soon, which attacks the problem of prison rape. And there's the corrections department is about to insist that there be an individual at every jail who is an expert at preventing prison rape and making reports on it. I mean, all of these things are good things, of course, but all of these things cost money. And there doesn't seem to be anything that saves very much money in the horizon. We're going to meet again. I've been desperately looking for my calendar, but like we'll meet the day before the first legislature meeting in November at 3:30.
Thank you, Peter. Any questions, Mike?
Speaking of money, Peter. We had a special meeting last week about the hydrilla issue and the inlet, and we talked about, and Sheriff Lansing was here and talked about the possibility of having to close the inlet. Are we going to, in addition to the money that we're going to spend for helping to do the treatment, are we going to run into money in the Sheriff's Department, a contingent request or something like that, for this extra effort running the sheriff's boat or something like that? I don't know exactly what it entails, but I wondered, is that some money coming down the line that we've got to look at?
Yeah, I honestly don't know, Mike. I had the sense that it was going to be like something like closing the roads, where they don't go out making a special effort to make sure that the roads are closed, you know, when there's...
You see Joe...
Joe.
Yeah. There is a possibility that there could be a cost. When it was first identified as a problem, the sheriff's office costed out the worst-case scenario, which would be basically 24/7 coverage for a two-week period, which I think is not really a reasonable scenario. In that worst case, because there have to be two people on the boat at a time, I think the cost was about $21,000. So in terms of a worst case for enforcement, that would be it. I think the expectations have changed over the past couple of weeks as this has developed. I know there are going to be buoys that will be placed. I don't think there's going to be a need for that kind of level of basically personal enforcement there. But to the extent that there is a need for people on a boat to enforce, that could well come to the sheriff. So there could be an additional cost to the county that goes along with the closure.
I don't expect it
to be near that $21,000, Mike, but there could be a cost.
I spoke to the sheriff last week, and he indicated that the state park police was willing to help.
Yes.
So it sounds like there will be a way to at least spread the cost, if not minimize them entirely. Something else, Mike?
No, that's all.
Okay. Peter, I'm curious about...
Go ahead.
I was going to change subjects. Go ahead.
No, it was not on that.
All right. I'll come back. Curious about 18-year-olds as juveniles. Do you mean 16 and 17 or 16, 17, 18?
16, 17, and 18.
And 18, okay. Leslie?
I I just wanted to give a date. The DA, also at Public Safety, talked about the newly enacted medical amnesty law, and she mentioned that on Wednesday, actually tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, at the TC3 boardroom, there is a meeting, a presentation basically, in helping people understand how to, her words were, operationalize the new laws. How are we going to be using those laws? And here in any county. So that I thought was very important if people are able to be there. I will try to go, understand, because it seems like it will have a good cost to us or to some of the departments here.
Medical amnesty, is that where if
medical
you call
amnesty.
Somebody who's in trouble, even if you're drinking under, okay.
Right.
If you're drinking underage, you won't suffer
right.
consequences.
Right.
You're just a good Samaritan for having called emergency.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Peter, another question, and maybe this will lead into Joe making giving us an update on the Indigent Defense Task Force. How, so if somebody is to be assigned an attorney at arraignment, that means how is it decided that fast that they are financially eligible to get an assigned attorney? Or is everybody just assigned an attorney?
I honestly don't know the details. But I guess someone has to make a judgment. I guess I don't really know how one makes that judgment. I mean, my understanding is that the magistrate makes the judgment, and so maybe they have to go, and the magistrate asks the person if they have the money for a counsel, and if they don't, then they all have to sit around there, the policeman, the person who's being arraigned, the magistrate, until the assigned counsel program digs up a lawyer. The difference in opinion is a difference of what Judge Lippman is saying. Joe says, Joe feels that, and he's certainly much closer to it than I am, that in fact that Judge Lippman wants to have some various kinds of projects to see how it is that could be done, particularly in counties like ours. And Julia, whose last name I don't know, but she's the person that always speaks for assigned counsel, Julia says no, that she points a piece of paper where Judge Lippman says this is going to start right now, and it's going to be required throughout New York State. So I honestly don't know for myself which assessment is closer to the truth.
So last Tuesday, Joe was
right. Was
at a task right. force meeting.
Right. I am on the Indigent Defense Board and had lunch with Judge Lippman last Tuesday as a part of that.
You win.
So that's my trump card. It is, first of all, the judge has made it very clear that it is his vision and his expectation that there will be counsel provided upon appearance, first appearance, at some point in time. That's where he sees the need for defense going in the future. However, in terms of the timeline of that, how you describe the approach is accurate. At this point, what the new Office of Indigent Defense is doing is asking for counties to submit pilot plans on how they might address that. And it doesn't have to be wholesale. It can be very retail. For example, there may be a county that would say, why don't we look at our city court? Because that's where the high volume of activity occurs. And because there are often holding cells in city facilities, it's easier to be able to accommodate that appearance or defense upon first appearance, because those people arrested would sit in a holding cell in a central facility awaiting the judge to come in the morning, and then the attorney can be assigned at that point for that person. So again, in that case, it would be just the city and not the entire county. So the state's looking for pilots like that to see what works. And they're willing to put money behind those pilots, 3-year grants to support the cost of those pilots. And as lessons are learned from those pilots, that might then give guidance to other counties on how they might approach this. So it is a very methodical process. I encouraged the Office of Indigent Defense to get a clear message to counties explaining that that's their intent, because right now there is confusion, and frankly there's huge anxiety about the cost that this may represent and the logistical nightmares. So hopefully they will take that up. I've also asked them to go to the next NYSAC conference and explain themselves, explain how this is going to work to counties in plain language that non-lawyers can understand. So I think that will happen, but again, that it is to begin slowly, methodically, and as a series of tests that will be funded with state grants.
Peter.
A thought I had, if I could just explain something. As Joe said, in the city, it's not such a problem because they have a holding cell, and a person can be held in a holding cell until the morning when the magistrate is available and it's easier to get a lawyer to represent them. And I wondered, well, why couldn't we just hold them in the county jail? And the answer was, well, a county jail ain't a holding cell, and that's that. And so I'm used to that. You know, the county jail is not a prison and so forth. There are these strict categories for how what various facilities are. But I did wonder whether we could work out an arrangement with the city whereby if someone had to, if that happened, perhaps we could board out our person for the night at the city holding cell so that, in fact, it the arraignment could take place in the morning when it would be easier to get an assigned counsel. But just a thought that I had.
Well, there are all sorts of unintended consequences, because that also means that somebody who might be released at that initial arraignment is going to end up spending the night in incarcerated.
I mean, it's not the best solution, but it's a cheaper solution for us at least.
Well, all right. I hope, and after the initial 3-year pilot grants are used up, whose money is going to pay for that? Well, I'm really glad you're on that board, Joe. All right. Thank you very much. Anything else, Peter?
No.
Okay.
No. Martha, can I just speak to that for just a second?
Sure, yeah.
Now, this is strictly my opinion from what I've heard from over the years, but I'm believing that the state would like to see, and especially the state court system, would actually like to see district courts instead of every village, every town having a court clerk, having a judge, that sort of thing, having central booking areas, having it's consolidation is what it boils down to, and probably not a bad idea ultimately, so that you can actually staff one place for one function. Let's face it, Tompkins County isn't that big, and it would be more convenient for everyone. The thing they would have to work out is just jurisdictionally, and it's going to be a problem if you're arrested in Groton, let's say, which isn't realistic because nobody gets arrested up there, or don't do anything wrong, let's put it that way. And then you bring them down to the city of Ithaca. Now, the city judge can arraign them with her stature. No one else can, but they can, or she can, or that court can, I should say. But then you bring up the possibility, okay, the city brings them down there, and they're being housed, and they do get released. Now what are you going to do with them? They're 25 miles away from where they were arrested from. So there's a lot of things to work out there. But I think ultimately, you remember Mr. Slaughter last week suggesting consolidation in terms of law enforcement, which, may not be a bad idea. But I think this is a step in the court side of basically getting around to doing the same thing.
Well, it's interesting. Some of us who were involved in intermunicipal work before TCOG was established will remember that through an informal process that Tim Joseph and Steve Witcher got started, basically with Kathy Valentino as Town of Ithaca supervisor, we a group of people met for several years, actually, and Peter was involved and some other folks were involved. Peter was involved as a town board member. And one of the topics we studied was, would it make sense to consolidate the local courts in that way? Okay, what would be the cost? What would the financial costs? What would be the financial benefits? What would be the other costs and benefits? You know, socially, is it good if you have a local justice who knows the community better, et cetera, versus more consistency, perhaps? It was really eye-opening that it would cost a whole lot more to consolidate. You would need a whole other courtroom. You would need a professional judge and all the people who go along with a professional judge. You would need a whole other sort of level of infrastructure that's now borne by towns, but really at a much more, much lower cost. And, you know, it really maybe was counterintuitive. Oh, yeah, it sounds much more efficient. But, in fact, you know, by the analysis we did back then, it was truly something that was going to cost taxpayers as a whole quite a bit more to consolidate.
I'm not suggesting that we do it. I'm suggesting that that's the direction that we're being steered.
Well, I'm telling Joe. Because I'm thinking of it now, and so he'll take it back to Judge Lubman.
If I could add one more thing on this topic, the one thing that I found out at the board meeting that was pertinent to this conversation about how do you do these things is that in the last budget cycle in Albany, $30 million of money that should have been going to the Office of Indigent Defense to support counties and their assigned counsel programs or legal aid programs was diverted into the state's general fund. It's $110 million of dedicated money, fine and fee money, that's supposed to come into this fund to support what we're talking about here. And $30 million of the $110 was diverted and put into state programs. So another topic of conversation at the board meeting was, how do we get that money back? And the recommendation was we really need to assert the county's right to that money to help pay for these programs as opposed to just letting it roll for another year when it becomes really a part of the state's kind of baseline operations, taking that money away.
That surprises me that the state would pilfer money like that.
I know, it's a shock.
Carol?
I'd be interested in seeing, in not necessarily assuming that the study that was formerly done would be necessarily all aspects of it would still hold in today's fiscal climate, and if we're relying on that, I'd be interested in seeing it and being able to look at sort of what it included and what it may not have included in the costs.
I'm not saying that that study was the basis for making a statewide policy decision. I don't know, Lord, if I could find it or if it might be somewhere in files that were transferred to you, Joe. But sure, I mean, it was a group of us in a room trying to figure out how would you analyze this, and I'm sure there's a more professional way to do it, but that was our initial conclusion. So, that in fact, what we didn't do is we didn't pursue it at that point, where we did pursue other items like shared equipment among highway departments, for example, and health insurance.
Did it include an assumption that the towns would put in to this effort in an equivalent amount to what they're now putting in to their individual
efforts? If I remember correctly, the whole idea was the taxpayer is the taxpayer. So if you're paying for something out of your town pocket versus your county pocket, we're looking for what's the most cost-effective way to provide the service. So I don't think it made a big distinction over whose budget it was in. We just look at what the budget would be if the towns kept it versus if it were a district and sort of a county base. Dooley?
What I remember from that study was that the biggest savings that were agreed on by most people really had to do with using electronic arraignment. It would require buying some equipment, but that seemed like the quickest, easiest efficiency. And the thing that people were least happy about was not having your local judge who knows the local cast of characters and knows what to expect when someone's brought in. You would lose that. And yes, I'm sure we have a copy of it somewhere.
All right. Okay, thank you very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, last night being Claiborne Chair.
Thank you. WDIC met last week on the 28th of September. We spent some time debriefing on the community conversation about 911 that the committee hosted, and we were well pleased. I did mention some of it to you all with the comments to turn out, despite it was the day of the flooding. You know, we had decided to continue with it, and so it was really well received. I'm very thankful to I don't know how to call him anything other than Chief Brian Wilbur for being the facilitator of that conversation. He was very gracious. We spent a fair amount of our time discussing civil service support. It's one of the goals of the committee since we have been in existence, talking about how can we be more supportive and working with our personnel department around the whole civil service system, including helping with recruiting people for the exams, with test preparation. And this particular conversation focused more on an aspect that we had been wrestling with, which is how do we help people get the practice tests and exams, whether they're older ones, so that they can either take with them, so they can learn at their own rate, at their own speed, or we can have them for our prep sessions. We realize that many people learn in different ways. Some people are good at coming to the test prep session and getting it. Others want to go into a little dark corner with, you know, the exam themselves and try to decipher, and they learn better that way. And so that's one of the areas we've been wrestling with, because we don't want to break any laws. Okay, most of them don't want to break any laws. And also knowing that the exams on the websites that we recommend are there through CSCA members who pay their dues, and so we don't want to just go get those. You have to pay for those exams. Some people may find it a little difficult to buy them, and so we were trying to figure out ways to enhance perhaps what the library has as a place that people can go and get a copy of the exam, return it, so that we don't have to be struggling with, you know, figuring out how to get them to folks and back. But that also could present its own accessibility issues for some people. So we spent a good deal of time just really trying to massage that and see what we can do with it. And we did ask our county administration and our personnel department to take a further look at that and see how can we best make this happen for the people who want to take those exams. How do we get them there? And how do we provide the kind of support they need, not just through the test prep, but the paper practice tests, so that they can be successful? And if I miss any part of that, members of WDIC, please let me know. The other part, another aspect that we discussed was the Africana resolution that I intend to bring back to this body with some newer information and newer developments, and that hopefully will be on, or is expected to be on, the October 18th, I think is the date, agenda, and we'll be looking to our budget and personnel committee to take a look at it as well. And then we spent some time, no, those were the two big things. We have not been able, another aspect of our goals, and one of the things we've been talking about has to do with disability accommodations and access. And we really need to jumpstart that conversation. It's one of the things when we were at Rice Hall,
we're having a big discussion. It's one of the categories that came out of one of our subgroups. But WDAC has had it on its agenda for a while to talk about access through sign language interpretation if people need that, not just the elevator, access through how do people participate in government and government be open to people who have varying disabilities to the extent that we're able to. So that's a conversation that has been moved to our next agenda. The last update to our diversity plan was on August 24th, and we're continuing to work on that. And our plan is by November we'll have that done. And I got word as I came in here tonight that the group that's working on the report out from the survey intends to report to WDIC in November, or present that report to WDIC in November, which means we'll be able to bring it to the legislature in December, our first meeting in December, hopefully, because we don't want this year to end without having that report here for people to see what the results were. That was it. We were going to talk about the Board of Assessment Review and how we can be supportive. Jay did reach out to WDIC asking how can we be supportive in helping to find members of the community, qualified members of the community to serve in that board. But unfortunately, he was going to come and present. Unfortunately, he could not be there. And we're also working, going to continue the conversation with personnel about looking at our training plan and what is it we really want to be training around, especially in the area of diversity and inclusion. So we'll continue that conversation with personnel to really iron out what that would look like, so that we are presenting things that our employees not only need, but that will benefit this entire organization. So that's my report. I'm lying. Larry Roberts from the Finger Lakes Independent Center is very good at bringing us events that are happening or activities that are happening, and I want to point out just a couple of things because I know many of us can probably benefit from, you know, participating in some of these. Tomorrow, Wednesday, from 2 to 4, there's a Living Well with Disability workshop. So every Wednesday is actually beginning tomorrow, and every Thursday, beginning October 6th, Healthy and Active Living Workshop. What I'm more interested in saying to just about every one of us, woman or not, that on October 19th, from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., the Women with Disabilities Health Group is presenting a workshop on the benefits of sleep. So I thought you all might want to know this and check it out. Joe, Martha, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, email people. Don't ask me what I'm doing. I'm seeing them, but I thought you might want to check that out. That's my report. Thank you, Leslie. Peter?
Martha, may I correct a misstatement I made? The Public Service Committee.
Sure. Wait. Are there any questions for Leslie?
Sorry.
All right. Duly noted about the sleep workshop. I think that's
why. Yes, I'm watching everybody around the room.
That's also why I sound like I do. Peter.
Yeah, the next meeting of the Public Safety Committee will take place on November 6th, which is not the day before the legislative meeting because the legislative meeting is on November 1st.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. And that also reminds me that our October WDIC meeting will occur on the fourth Wednesday, but November, and I'm asking in advance if there are any, you know, conflicts, and our staff will probably know that, we will have to move because that would be the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, and I'm not sure I'll have a whole lot of people showing up for diversity and inclusion meeting. So please note.
Thank you very much, Leslin. Work, Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Health Committee met just before this meeting this evening, and we've already dealt with the resolution and the action item associated with that. I have a couple of items that I want to give you a heads up on. First, our next formal meeting is the 12th, a week from tomorrow, at 3:30. And at that meeting, we'll be dealing with, the various agenda items that are coming together now. But earlier today, we had the third meeting of the special committee that Joe appointed to deal with the CHA sale. And I wanted to report to you without too many details, because the recommendation from the special committee will now go to the health committee. But there were two respondents to the RFP, as you know, and the committee was unanimous in their selection of one of them to be the preferred purchaser, if that's correct, of the CHA and our certificate of need. And that recommendation will go to the health committee at for the meeting on the 12th, and then it will come here for your action. We'll be in better shape to give you more details after the health committee meets. The other item I wanted to report on is a rather brief TCAT. Some of the TCAT responsibility, well, the majority of it goes through planning through PAM's committee. There's a piece of it that comes through the Health and Human Services Committee. TCAT, because of the route changes and some of the adjustments, is having a series of meetings around the county to work with various residents to address their questions and whatnot regarding the change in fares and the change in four or five routes. Pam, there was some adjustment there. We asked, the three of us that are your representatives on that, we asked that Patty Poist, the communications person, send to the board a list of what those changes are and where the meetings are taking place, the dates and times, because they're starting right now. I know in Danby the meeting is tomorrow night, and next week it'll be in, a week after next it'll be in Caroline, but I can't recite where it will be for all of you. If you haven't received that list, you know, check with Pam or myself, and we'll make sure that it goes out again. But that list should have been distributed to the county legislature, because some of you may have constituents who are affected by that change. I'm sorry, Pam. Did you want to add anything regarding that TCAT thing?
No, that's fine.
And once again, we'll be meeting on the 12th, and you're all welcome to come. It's going to be an exciting meeting on the CHA. Did I say that the decision was unanimous?
You did.
We really ought to thank Joe for pulling this special committee together. They worked well together, and I think a special thanks to Will. Will, while not one of the members of the committee, has attended every one of them and has weighed in on a lot of the questions. So we had some really good participation. Paul has been at them, and we've really dug into some of the items. I think you'll be pleased with the deliberations that went on.
Thank you very much, Frank. And in regards to that, since you meet the Wednesday before the legislature meeting, do you want to put onto the previous day, the Tuesday, onto the legislature's agenda pending committee action approval of that decision? Because if you we don't want to, I understand that there's some sort of urgency to get this finalized so that the transition can begin. So if you sort of work with Kathy, we often put resolutions on pending committee approval.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, Martha.
Okay, and if legislators could get whatever background material, have that included in the packet as well.
Okay.
Thank you. Peter?
I have a question, Frank. I'm not sure it's appropriate. It's appropriate, but if it's not, I'll understand. But you said there were two choices, and I wondered whether the difference in price that was offered was the determining factor, or was it the level of care to the people who would be served by this that was the determining factor, or is it more complicated than that?
Certainly not more complicated, but there was a difference in price. The two respondents did quote different prices, considerable difference in price, in my opinion, which will benefit the county. However, the list of parameters that were set up and the evaluation criteria was really exacting, and the level of care, how they were selected, the interaction with other community organizations like HospiCare, the hospital, agencies that had health-related supportive services, the special committee really dug into that. And I left my set of material out in the car, but I've got a collection of information. By the way, there's a copy of the RFP here. I think Karen sent an email around that if anybody wanted to read it, it broke it down pretty well. But I think the questions and the effort on behalf of the health department, Frank Krupa, Brenda and Sigrid and Jennifer really helped pull a lot of this together with the evaluation. Betty Falco from the Health Planning Council was extremely deliberative on some of the information. The people that understood the numbers and what they meant for Medicaid and Medicare and the reimbursements were right on. Dr. McMillan from the Board of Health raised a number of very interesting questions. So it wasn't all price entered into it. Don't get me wrong; we don't want to give it away. On the other hand, it wasn't the sole determining factor. Go ahead, Will.
Well, actually, correct me if I'm wrong, Frank, but in the RFP, we actually stated that price would not be the determinant. That we would be looking for others and. I think to the committee's credit, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out what were the various different criteria. And Joe kept reminding us that what we really were trying to do was come up with something that was going to be the best quality, because we are serving a vulnerable population. We've been serving it well, and we wanted to make, as best we could determine, pick the group that would continue or improve the level of service.
Thanks.
So perhaps we can get a full description at the next legislature meeting, assuming the committee moves it forward.
Yes. Can I ask Joe, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think you've summarized it very well. And again, at committee, we can go into the details.
Okay. Come to the committee meeting, Peter. I'll buy you coffee.
And everybody remember what's already been said here, so we can start after this part at the next meeting.
Not a chance.
All right. Thank you, Frank.
You bet.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Well, Frank may be offering coffee, but Facilities and Infrastructure is offering breakfast this Friday. 8:30 Friday, October 7th, you are invited for breakfast, the light breakfast, at the Solid Waste Single Stream Recycling Center grand opening. We're really looking forward to seeing this. 8:30 breakfast, you better get in line fast, because at 8:45 there'll be a few words said, and they will be short words, because so shortly after 9 we will be entertained on tours of the facility. And those of you who will attend the rest of the Facilities and Infrastructure actual meeting are promised first in line on the tour. So that you can be at the meeting where we went back and forth between 9:30 and 9:45. 9:45 Friday, and that meeting will be change of location. That meeting will be out at the solid waste conference room, which is not the same building. So gather for the opening at the offices. And so we look forward, and then we have a full agenda for our meeting. So we look forward to seeing you then.
Thank you, Kathy.
So I take it that you, as chair of the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, are sponsoring breakfast for everyone?
We have been invited by the department, and the, as I understood from the last one, this has been the last one was a joint effort by the department and the firm that is constructing the facility. I'm not sure how they split the bill this time.
So you're not buying us coffee?
We are buying us coffee. I think we are buying us coffee.
I was going to say, Karen, that's when you said, yes, I'm making eggs and grits.
That's what I was
bagels. I'm making bagels in honor of the Jewish holiday.
Bagels?
And croissants. And croissants.
We helped them recycle.
How about locks?
Okay. Thanks,
not
everybody.
In our budget.
You just have to come and see.
You'll have to come and see, right?
Well, Capital Plan Review Committee is not offering anything, but we are meeting on October 13th, a week from Thursday, and we're just going to be boring and talk about stuff. So that's our next meeting. We have not met since the last legislature meeting, so I have no other report. I have a note here, update on redistricting. Did Mike, did you want to make a comment on the redistricting commission?
Only that they've been working through their efforts. They had a meeting at the city recently with city council people and people from the city there. I didn't happen to attend that because this is an independent committee. But I think there was a press release afterwards from our department that I would refer everybody to.
Okay. Karen?
Yeah, I should add, probably in light of that question, that in the last, on the groundbreaking, the Ithaca Bakery helped to host that breakfast. So they should have a shout-out. Thank you to the Ithaca Bakery.
Okay. Well, set with the bagels. All right. Thank you, Mike. Budget, Capital and Personnel Committee, Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you very much. I appreciate very much that you delayed this resolution. We had a full house, and I'm going to move right to it. It's Resolution E, Adoption of Local Law Number B of 2011, a local law overriding tax levy limit for fiscal year 2012, and I would move that.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley.
A couple of comments. There's been much discussion about this, clearly in the community and around the state on the local law or overriding the tax cap wherever you happen to be a resident. And what I want to say from my point of view and the legislature's point of view, at least, or the budget committee, is this is an option available to us as we move forward with the budget process. By having this in place does not commit anyone to anything. What it does commit you to is the discussion that will take place as we move toward the final budget in the middle of November. But it is an option. It has been made available to us by New York State law, and I frankly think we should have that option as one of many things that we can do. On your desk, there was a paper put out by the county administrator, and it's called Just in Time.
I haven't handed that out, but I will now.
Oh, all right. Go ahead. Sorry. While the county administrator is handing that out, a couple of things. We are having an EBC. Well, there has been discussion that we should delay this, and let me just say you know, it is a possibility, but I think it would be a possibility we shouldn't avail ourselves of, because of the fact that if you look at your budget calendar, your EBC calendar, we have a voting meeting on October 17th. So essentially you would be voting on a budget or parts of a budget that you really didn't know what the limits were. And it would make more sense in terms of smoothing the process out that we do have this option on the table. Everything is there. When we get to the voting on the budget, then we're able to go in any direction that we want to with all that. So I would hope that people can support this at this time, and then we can move on to the voting meetings ready to go with all our options in place.
Okay, did everybody get, first Peter, did everybody get this?
And Joe, would you want to run through this at this point or no?
Does everyone have it? Has it gone all the way around the corner? No?
Where is it?
Sorry.
All right.
It came to me. I did not see it.
Okay. All right. I'd like to ask Joe to explain it.
Yeah. It's pretty straightforward. It works backwards from the calendar. And the calendar begins with the assumption that you would like to approve the budget on November 15th. That's kind of the track that we're on right now. There's a public hearing that's scheduled for November 9th. You need to post notice of that public hearing on November 2nd. And as I've put in here, at the time that notice is posted, the budget that's going to be the subject of that public hearing really should be in place so people know what they're being invited to comment on at the time. So you'd want to have the budget in place by the time that notice goes out so people can come in and look at what they are being asked to comment on. The other bullet that I put in here under that date is the budget that is presented for public comment should be legal. So it's either within the tax cap or there's a waiver in place to exceed the tax cap. So that should be in place by the time it goes to a public hearing. And, again, the notice is on November 2nd, which means the last day for the legislature to accept amendments that are made by the Expanded Budget Committee as its recommended budget would be the day before that, November 1st. Now, as you, the way local laws work, there's a filing period with the Secretary of State that usually takes 7 days. So to be able to fit this calendar and to allow for that 7-day period for the local law to sit in the Secretary of State's office as a part of the filing period, that means that the last day you could pass a local law for the cap and still meet this deadline would be October 25th. So if you work then backwards to your normal meeting cycle, that would mean the latest you would want to go to meet the schedule would be your next meeting. So that's really the timeline that I've been looking at. And again, I would consider that the just-in-time approach to the waiver of the cap.
And if I would just add that to expand on what Jim said, that the Expanded Budget Committee meets 3 more times before that October 18th legislature meeting. And, of course, even if we are all here for an Expanded Budget Committee meeting, we are just the Budget Committee. We're not convened as the legislature. So 2 of those meetings are set up as presentation meetings, and the October 17th meeting is meant to be a meeting when we start voting on individual motions. And when I looked at the calendar and realized that today, I thought that was, it really is important to know what our limit is. Is it 2-9 or is it something else before we actually start? I know I would like to know what the limit is before I start voting on any motions that might be made. So, all right, with that, Peter?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion and speak to it if it gets a second, and I would like to move that we postpone this resolution until October, what's today, the 4th? It's October 18th, which is the next time we meet as a legislature.
And Pam seconds that. All right, discussion on postponement. Brian.
May I speak to you?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, Peter, go ahead.
Yeah. I this is complicated. And I don't think it's easy, but what is moving me to do this is that I believe that in the public, despite the fact that we have heard hardly anybody asking us to stay within the tax cap, I do believe the polls, which say that New Yorkers are, by a large margin, in favor of the tax cap. And given that, it seems to me that we, and it is in fact a law that was passed by the governor and passed by both houses of the assembly. We may not like it. I do realize the difficulty it puts us in, but nonetheless, it seems to me not that we necessarily must abide by the tax cap, but I think that we ought to both appear to be and actually be reluctant rather than eager to override the tax cap. And that's really the essential reason why I think that we ought to postpone it as long as possible. My own guess is that I personally, on that meeting, will vote to override the tax cap. I have done some looking at it, and I realize that the cuts that were made for the 2.9% budget by Joe will be difficult on many of the people who are the most vulnerable. On the other hand, I believe that the 5.4% budget that we have can, in fact, be cut. And I would like to have the time to know everything that I learned by the expanded budget committee to make those decisions of exactly what we think should be made in order to keep the tax rate as low as possible. I would like to have as much time to do that as possible. That being the case, that's basically why I'm moving this. Now, the argument that Martha made, which frankly I had not thought of before an hour and a half ago, namely that we're having a voting meeting, means that we ought to know the parameters. I'm not actually sure of that. I have not been through many of these budget meetings. As a matter of fact, the only one that I've been to before, the budget process, is the one that we did last year. And I did notice that, in fact, in that, we had the tax rate at the just before the final decision much higher than we ended up with. And so it became clear to me that nothing is final until the fat lady sings, that at the very end we can, in fact, make decisions to actually reduce the tax rate if we find that it's too high. And I think we could imagine dealing the same way with the tax cap. If we have a tax cap of 2.9%, it wouldn't bother me particularly to see the tax rate rise above that, with the understanding that at the last moment, if in fact we don't override it, we'll have to make other decisions to lower it to that point. So basically that's my argument, and that's why I'm for this.
Okay, I've got Brian, Jim, Carol, and myself, and Dooley. And Nathan.
I tend not to buy that argument that you just made. For one reason, before when we were discussing a tax cap that we made, it was an artificial number that we made, and we could enter into discussions whether we wanted to lower it or raise it or whatever. In this case, it's a matter of law as it stands right now, that tax cap number. So therein is the difference. And I personally don't see why we couldn't vote on this tonight. I mean, I have that's no indication as to how I would vote personally on any of this. But, I mean, this resolution could have been passed back in March. I mean, what difference does it make? if we are, the only thing I would ask is that if we are going to pass this proposal that was just made, then we should probably cancel the voting meeting on the 17th because, how are we to discuss items that might differ from the tax cap? We would be discussing things that would be in violation of the law.
Well, to be clear, if we might approve
We may at a later time, but
that would later be offset by a cut. So,
okay.
But I yes, right.
No, I understand.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Brian. Jim, Carolyn.
Just a few short comments. I agree with Peter. There are polls that make the governor look very good in the state legislature. And Tompkins County spends a lot of money for people, all of us, to go to NYSAC meetings when we hear the exact opposite, that on the ground, what kind of impact a 2.9 does for counties. And, you know, I'm neither reluctant nor eager to do this. This fits within a timeline that makes sense to the way we adopt our budget in Tompkins County. And I certainly would not like to have a discussion of 2.9 versus some program that we have. I think I would like everyone to be at the table with the complete knowledge of all the options we have. And that's why it makes sense for me, and I believe the county, to pass this at this time, and then we can move on and finish the rest of the budget.
Carol.
Yeah, I have a question for Jim, and then the confirmation, and then something to say. Jim, is my understanding correct that if we pass the law overriding the tax levy limit, we are not therefore obligated to go over that limit when we pass our budget?
Yes, okay. We are not obligated to go.
So I would normally go for a compromise. I would like to send the strongest message possible to New York State, along with many, many other counties and school districts, I think, that this 2% number is an arbitrary number, especially because our numbers go up and down, and other items in the budget will change between now and then. So I would normally be in favor of a compromise and say, okay, if Joe's telling us just in time is 2 weeks from now, that we could wait till then in order to send a stronger message. But I'm actually with Brian on the timing. I think that this is just in time, and because who among us, I just think that whatever departments we talk about in that first voting meeting and have to vote on the amendments, it will be an extreme disadvantage. If we don't know what our parameters are. And so it seems to me we will end up, we're scheduled for, 2.5-3 hours, we'll end up wasting our time, because who among us are going to want to bring resolutions, you know, amendments to a meeting where people won't want to vote for them because we don't know what the parameters of our budget are going to be, you know, when even some of the items that we have to address are already taken up under the 2% or the whatever it is now, the 2.9%. So it just doesn't make sense to me that this isn't just in time tonight. I'm with Brian. We should just cancel that meeting, which means we have to find another date that all 15 of us can are available and could come to a meeting.
Just in time. That you got to give credit to Joe on that one. That's his catchphrase.
Well, and he said October 25th would be just in time, and you're saying that tonight is just in time.
I'm saying that tonight is just in time because otherwise we're going to waste the time slot we've already scheduled.
Got clarification, Jim?
Yeah. I forgot for a moment that we were voting on his amendment, not on the original resolution. So
right.
What I'm saying is that I will not support Peter's amendment.
The resolution to wait. Okay. I'm going to take a turn, and Dooley, Nathan, and Pat.
I'm not going to speak.
What? Oh, okay. I put on your desks this document, which is taken from Joe's PowerPoint. I think, Joe, your PowerPoints ought to be put into our budget books from now on. So anyway, I picked out a few pages that I thought had the most relevance because what people have said to me, what Peter has said to me, is that a reason to wait is that we need more information. We don't know everything we need to know about our budget in order to know whether we need to go over 2.9. Well, we've had the budget since the first week of September. We've had three or four meetings already. Joe's PowerPoint, you know, this, I think this was when you presented the budget, you gave us this PowerPoint. So I want to highlight a couple things that are in here, which we already know, which we're in a much better situation than other counties because we already know exactly what 2.9 looks like. We don't, you know, we didn't ask for 5.4 as a sole budget. We asked to see what 2.9 would look like, which is the tax cap number. So on the first page, the impact on the average home. At tax cap, the impact would be $2,169 versus the higher budget recommended is $47. Now, remembering, we don't voting for the to go over the to allow ourselves to consider higher than the cap doesn't mean that we will. The next page, if we stick with the tax cap, if we do not vote for this, then we already know that we're going to have to cut 3.8% in locally controlled spending. That's $1.5 million in requests that can't be restored. We already know, going to the next page, that road paving will be cut 20%, that we'll have to reduce staff in assessment, emergency response, facilities, human rights, library planning, and sheriff. Work week reductions in other departments and reduced funding for the human service agencies, rural libraries, rec partnership, et cetera. And then looking at the charter, we already know that if we stuck to the cap, we would be losing another 31 positions out of our staff.
Aren't we really now discussing the resolution rather than the postponement?
Okay, I'm just saying, in order to postpone it, it's for the reason that we don't have enough information. I'm just pointing out we really do have the information. That's all I'm trying to say. So I just wanted to walk through the document that I pulled off at Joe's Whip, you know, PowerPoint, that we do already know exactly what 2.9% looks like, and I don't think it looks good at all. Dooley, Nathan, then Pat.
I jotted down what I think I heard Peter say in introducing his motion, that we should appear to be and actually be reluctant to override the cap, and that he would like to have time to consider how to get below 5.4%. I do not support his motion because, as Martha just happened to point out, we do have enough information to know what 2.9% looks like, and I think we have enough information to know what a disaster that would be for our residents. So if, Peter, as you indicated, given a couple more weeks, you would probably vote to override the cap, you can see my puzzlement with your motion. I think we have the information necessary to know that we need the flexibility to override the cap without having that sit on us and keep us from debating fully what we want to support.
Nathan, did you say you want to pass on this?
No, I'll speak. Why not? Yeah. All right, because I've been quiet. I'm not in favor of Peter's amendment. I do hope that we vote for it tonight. And I just feel like, you know, I'm tired of these games that are played in government constantly. I mean, just like the governor with his tax cap and not having mandate relief. I mean, that was a game, right? It was saying, oh, I'm going to give you tax relief, but it isn't tax relief. So I'm tired of playing games. I'm not going to sit here tonight and go, I'm not going to vote on this resolution, or we shouldn't talk about it right now, because, you know, there may be a chance that we'll work on things. No, I'm going to be totally honest. We have the information that's here, and we know what 2.9% looks like, as people have said, and the time to vote is now. We have to be honest with people, and that's exactly. I'm sorry, I'm very convoluted right now, but I just think we need to be honest with people, and we know that it's the time to vote, and so we should vote.
Pat, then Peter, then Pam.
Well, several people have made the points that I had planned to make, so I'll just be very brief, hopefully. I, too, am opposed to Peter's motion to postpone this vote. When I voted last time, I voted against consideration of, or I voted against starting the process to override the tax cap for the because I felt that we had not had sufficient time to consider all the information that had been presented to us to feel comfortable in my own mind that that is actually what we were going to have to do. I no longer feel that way. I feel that we now, for all the reasons that have been mentioned here tonight, have had the time to do that, and I am convinced that it's smart of us to be prepared in the event that, in fact, we do need to vote to go over the tax cap, to go ahead and put that in motion so that, if necessary, we will be able to do that. Unfortunately, I think to delay any further at this point falls within that part of the explanation of being more of to support this would be more a matter of appearances as opposed to the reality of what the situation really is. So I'm opposed to Peter's motion, and I will support the main motion when it comes up.
Thank you, Pam. Pam, and then Peter, then Mike. Or, I'm sorry, I had Peter, then Pam. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had originally decided I would make my statement and not say anything more about it, but some of the, what people have said have come close to making it sound like I'm playing games, Nathan, or not being straightforward, but just trying to make an appearance of doing something, and that simply is not the case. What I said at the beginning is what I think. I've been spending a lot of time looking at the budget and trying to see how close we can get to the tax cap. And I was totally honest when I said that at the moment, I don't think it can be done, but I'm not through looking, and I would like to have as much time as possible. I understand that it doesn't mean you can't vote against it, but as we all know, the unsaid statement in the room is that it takes 9 votes to override the tax cap, but only 8 to make the tax, to decide on exactly how much above the tax cap we're going to go. So that's the basic difference. That's all I have to say.
Pam, then Mike.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm supporting it doesn't have to do with the amount of information that we have. I mean, we certainly have had a fair amount of information, but it's to do with our constituents out there. I think that that they, as we go through our proceedings, our extended budget committee meetings, and talk about the budget, that it provides people the opportunity to understand more clearly where we're at, and that we haven't made this decision before we have heard from them and before we have listened to all of the information. So I really just don't see any reason why we can't wait until the 18th to do this. And so I will be supporting Peter's motion.
Mike.
I'd like to call the question on the motion.
All right, seconded by Will. All in favor of calling the question, please raise your hand. It's on the to vote on the amendment.
We're calling the question. Right?
Calling the question on whether to vote on the amendment. Opposed? That passes 14 to 1. All right, the motion before us is to postpone Resolution E until the next legislature meeting on October 18th. All in favor of that, of postponing, please raise your hand. All in favor of Peter's motion or amendment, which is to postpone consideration for 2 weeks, raise your hand. 4, opposed? That fails, 4 to 11. So we are back to the main motion. Is there any discussion on that? Mike.
I think a lot of the arguments have been made, certainly been made when we've talked about things in the expanded budget committee. I'm going to support this. I don't like it. I don't like having to do it at all, but the state set this procedure out for us. I'm not, by my vote, saying I approve a 5.4% tax levy increase. I think we can do better than that. And if we can't do better than that, I probably won't support the budget. I think we need to work at it, and I think we will.
Carol and Nathan.
Yeah. My assumption is that passing this law or not tonight, this motion tonight, has nothing to do with what our ultimate budget is going to be. I am assuming that during our budget process, we will, as we always do, have people who come in and say, let's make the, you know, the tax rise zero, or let's make it one, or let's make it two. And that what this does, what this says is New York State, we it's sort of a home rule kind of approach, this is our decision. It's one of the things you give us jurisdiction over, and that we don't want, that we're going to exercise that, and it's our right to exercise that. And I am assuming that we will have many, many discussions between now and the time that we vote on a budget about what the rate ought to be.
So I will support this resolution. Thank you. Nathan, and then Jim.
I'll be quick. I have a Google News alert on tax cap override, and I've been just following different towns and like libraries and other places that are looking at tax cap overrides. And I came across a really short but good quote, and it's not anything new, but I just thought it succinctly put how I felt. And this is from Dutchess County Executive William Steinhaus, and he writes to Governor Cuomo, "Respectfully, Governor, the failure of you and the state legislature to enact state mandate relief for counties concurrent with the enactment of the property tax cap makes a mockery of your good intentions." And I was like, wow, that's succinct, and that's how I feel. So I second that.
Thank you, Nathan. Jim, and then Leslyn.
I will pass.
Leslyn.
There are not many times when I sit on this legislative body and feel torn about which direction I want to go in. I'm usually pretty decisive. This is one of those times, however. Like, I feel similar to how I felt last year when we were down to the final vote in the budget. Like, for me, I have not done enough work to feel that I can reasonably say, let me do this right now. I also recognize that this is just a tool, so I don't want anybody to think that I don't know what this is. But it's that point where I don't feel there's been enough of, we've had lots of presentations, but I don't feel there's been enough of that voting part where we go back and forth and decide what we're keeping, what we're not keeping, what is it looking like at this point, et cetera, to feel like I can do this. And so now I've talked myself now into saying that I am not going to support this tonight.
All right, I want to say something then, Frank. One reason I support this is, if you remember, we started out with Joe presenting that our cap level is actually 2.9% based on the growth factor and on our pension bill, and those are the two items, right, our pilots. There was discussion at NYSAC of what if we're wrong on that calculation? And as we know, the state can look at our bills, you know, and come back 5 years later and say, oh, you know, you didn't figure that reimbursement correctly, or you didn't figure that formula right, and actually you owe us more money. They could do the same thing with the tax cap, and I know I did go to a workshop at which it was described. What are the mechanics of how they are setting the cap? How are they determining what our cap should be? How are they determining each county's growth factor? And it's very complicated, and the comptroller's office is, and I use this word advisedly, negotiating with the governor's office on how and what the intent of the law is supposed to be. It is not clear what this great vaunted tax cap really is. It's not clear what 2% is. It's not clear what the growth factor is. So I think this is actually something that can spare us possible liability down the road in case 2.9, they decide later on, is not actually the right number. If they come back and say, well, actually, it should have been 2.5, and let's say we passed it. You know, we passed a 2.9 budget, and they say 5 years later, I should have been 2.9. It should have been lower. We would have to take some of that current year budget, put it back, and send it back to the taxpayers, regardless of anything else that was on our plate at the time. So they are building in ways that they're going to hold our feet to the fire that they set, the number that they set, and we don't know yet what that's really going to turn out to be. So even if we come in at a 2.9 budget or less, I feel this is kind of a safety issue to say that we've done due diligence to say we're going to set our local levy, and I don't think that we need an arbitrary rule from Albany to make responsible, thoughtful, careful decisions on behalf of our residents. I've seen this body do that for 10 years, and I don't think we should be sending the message that we need them to tell us what the levy should be. I think we've been able to do that. And so I just want to say that I'm going to support this measure. I do think it's a safety issue as well as a sort of fiscal safety as well as the responsible thing to do. Frank, did I see your hand up?
Yes. Thanks, Martha. I tend to agree with Leslin on this one. This is a law, and I'm sorry, Peter, while I've supported your motion to postpone, the circle I travel in my district, I've heard from a number of people who want us to be sensitive to this cap. Doesn't mean I'm in support of it. I may vote tonight not to support the cap, but may vote to support the budget if it exceeds it. I'm coming back to some of the comments I made during the budget deliberations on the Health and Human Services Committee has already made a sizable contribution to getting this number down below the what started out at $5 million and now it's about a $3 million savings. We have, if I count them correctly, we have 5 meetings left. Thursday, and then the 11th, and then the 17th, the 25th, and the 26th. If I read Joe's just-in-time note correctly, the 25th is the same night as one of our expanded budget committee meetings. If we really wanted to, Martha called a special meeting for the hydrilla item last Monday, and the meeting took place on Thursday. If we wanted to have a special legislative meeting on October 25th, subsequent to the deliberations that take place earlier, we could certainly have a meeting a little later that evening. I mean, it's practical, it's possible to do. I think it's time that we really have to get into this even more. We haven't even finished the presentation stages yet. And I respect that those of you that really are chewing on this and the timing, I understand what Brian has said, the timing for having a tool is, in some of your opinions, is necessary. In my opinion, we can implement this tool or craft it, as some like to say, on the 25th of October if we have to. And that's where I'm coming down. I'd like to hear from the departments that haven't even made presentations yet. And I'd certainly like to get into trying to refine the number that write-up that Martha distributed earlier only has some areas on it that are cut, and I realize that really came from Joe, it didn't come from Martha, but there perhaps are other areas and other divisions and departments, thank you, that could be apropos. So I'm not going to support the override tonight. Thank you.
All right. See if I have this right. Peter, Jim, and then Nathan, and Dave. All right. Peter.
Yeah, this is complicated and convoluted. And my own position, which I said before, I'm going to repeat once again, is that if you ask me now, what do I think? Do I think in the end that I would support the 2.9%, the answer is no, I don't think so. But I could change my mind. As I say, I have not finished looking at it and heard all the presentations. That being the case, if by any miracle this resolution failed today, as I believe that we cannot raise the tax cap again unless someone votes, someone who votes to defeat it changes his or her mind and brings it up again. For that reason, I will vote against the tax cap, with the understanding that if in fact it comes to October 25th and we figure out that and I believe that we can't live without it, then I will move to reconsider.
Wait, you mean you're going to vote against the motion?
I'm going to vote against the motion.
Which is to vote in favor of the tax cap.
That's correct. Do I make myself clear? I got mixed up when I was explaining.
I'm confused.
It.
All right. In other words, Frank, I can't just call a special meeting. Hold on. If this fails tonight, I can't just say let's revote. Am I right, John? Somebody has to move. Want to reconsider?
Who is either not present, which obviously doesn't apply here because everybody's present, or who voted with the prevailing side, which would be if it's defeated, could bring it up again either later in this meeting or at the next legislative meeting, which Kathy tells me is the 18th, not the 25th. I'm not sure if Peter misspoke about that. I think
That's
he
right.
just misspoke.
I meant the 18th.
Yeah, I think he meant that.
The 25th is not a legislature meeting.
No, but at the 18th, I could bring it up again
right.
at this point. Right. Trying to explain my position.
So despite the fact that the idea of postponing failed by 4 to 11, you would do this to try to get that done. All right. Jim, Nathan, then Dave.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if we get to a vote, I would like a roll call vote on this. That's all.
Is that it? All right. Nathan?
Yeah. I just wanted to quickly say that I don't see voting in favor of this as a sign of, you know, that we're giving up on the process or we're not even going to try. That's what I've heard some constituents say. You know, because if you look in the past, and I have a little graph here, right, of our tax levy over the years, and you know those those times where the graph was really high, that's when the state shifted huge amounts of costs to the counties, right? But if you look at like 2008, we had 2.82% tax levy increase. In 2009, we had a 2.99% increase, and then it's crept up since then, and mostly because of the state. So this shows that this legislature, I mean, even though there were some of you that weren't elected at that time, but for the most part, I mean, this legislature has had fiscal discipline. And even when there wasn't a tax cap, we absolutely strove to have, is that a word? We actually worked very, very hard to have a tax levy that would have fit, if there was a tax cap, be around that area. But the difference is that the state gave us this tax cap and then completely... trying to not use profanity here, and so, and set us up for failure, and so I just want to make that point that this is not giving up. I think that we, you know, we'll still have discipline moving in the budget process, and so but really we need to do this in order to move forward on the budget. So I hope that it will be supported tonight. Thanks.
I've got Nathan, Dave, Mike, and then Frank.
Okay. Well, I'd like to say that I agree with Frank, disagree with Nathan. And the reason that I do that is if we put this in place, it just makes it far too easy to raise the tax levy. I think we should just hold off, and I tend to agree with Frank. Set up a special meeting for the 25th. We can set it up today.
No, we can't just set up a special meeting. The only time we could reconsider would be at the next meeting, next legislature meeting. The 25th is not relevant. It would have to happen at the 8th, on the 18th.
Well, I don't intend to support it, so I'd be willing to offer it up as a chance.
So, Peter, you don't need to cast a negative vote here. All right, thank you, Dave. Mike, and then Frank.
I just say real quickly, then I hope we could vote. For those folks that want to wait to the last possible minute, did anybody watch what happened in Congress when they were fighting over the debt limit, raising that, and waiting till the last possible minute, and the jitters it caused through Wall Street and everywhere else that we're still experiencing. It's not a good government to wait to the last minute and panic.
Thank you, Mike. Frank?
Well, Mike just gave me something else to disagree with. Getting more information, and I'm not suggesting we waiting till the last minute is always a negative item. It just gives you an opportunity to deliberate a little bit more. We don't influence Wall Street. Sorry, Mike. We don't influence the jitters in Congress. The jitters are around this table. What I was going to say goes back to what Nathan was quoting. Unfortunately, I don't have a laptop with me, and if I did, I probably would not know how to access this anyway. But the years that Nathan is referring to, it would be interesting to know how much money we shifted from our fund balance, and I do remember that there were a couple of hefty years where we took money out of our fund balance to keep the levy down, and also what our sales tax receipts were in those years. It would be, while I tend to agree with you that the state has kicked us in the shins more times than some of us would like to admit, I don't think all of those tax rates are reflective of the state's actions. I think some of it is, at the number of years I've sat around this table, some of it is because we wanted to spend the money, and it's as simple as that. There are even some that wanted the levy to be higher. So, anyway, thank you.
Well, I was here during the years when we had the cap, before the Medicaid cap, and those two big bars were the last 2 years before the Medicaid cap was put in place. All right. Anyone else? That's the last on my list.
Jim asked for a roll call.
Are we ready to vote? So, roll call.
Could you restate the...
This is to support Resolution E, adoption of local law overriding the tax levy limit for fiscal 2012. So, to be clear, if you vote against this, it means you're accepting a 2.9% levy limit.
That is not true.
Well, if we can't, we can't legally over. If this fails, we can't legally override.
Excuse me. This, we are not in violation until the day we vote on the budget, which will not be during the next five meetings. The actual vote on the budget, if I read Joe's memo correctly here, is November 15th. That's when we have to be concerned, and that comes after, my calendar says, after October 25th. So, respectfully disagree, Martha. It does not mean that we are accepting a 2.9%.
All right. I'm ready to vote.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Ms. Chack?
Yes.
Mr. Dennis?
Yes.
Ms. Herrera?
No.
Ms. Kiefer?
Yes.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. McAsey?
No.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
No.
Mr. McKenna?
No.
Mr. Proto?
No.
Ms. Pryor?
Yes.
Mr. Robison?
Yes.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Yes.
Mr. Stein?
No.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
Nine ayes, six noes.
The motion is agreed to. All right. Thank you, Jim.
Let me make one more comment. As we roll through the process here, we need to establish, well, I want to establish a way that we are going to do resolutions and amendments resolutions that each one of you have. So the first thing I would like is that even though we are still listening to departments, that you would begin to think about the kinds of things that you want to change in the budget that you would make motions on as we go through the process to get to the voting meetings. Later on this week, we will send out an email and to everyone instructing how we would like it to work. And I think it's going to be a good system between Kathy and Kevin and the county administrator as we move forward. Begin to think about it now. Get your motions together, and you can even submit them if you wanted to prior to us even getting through with the listening part of the process. So with that, go ahead.
All right, and your next meeting, the next expanded budget committee meeting is...
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everyone said it at least three times during this discussion. Thursday is the next expanded budget committee. We have another on the 11th. We have another on the 17th, which is the first voting meeting. And the ledge again meets on the 18th. That concludes my report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leslie.
Martha, I just need to ask a clarifying question. Did you just say that the resolution went down or failed?
It passed 9-6.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what I heard. And I was like, 60% is not failure. Thank you.
Nine was the votes needed, and we
right,
passed.
Right, no, I got it. Okay. I thought I heard something different.
Any questions for Jim? All right, that's our last.
It's a budget question. Joe, I appreciate this document, but I also needed to clarify this November 15th date. That's the date that we vote, we have as our voting date. Right. But that is not the absolute drop-dead date it's that not, we have to do no. this. And that's sort of what I was hearing.
Yes.
So we have up until December some point, if we don't do then, to pass it. Otherwise, yours become the adopted budget. So I think that needs to be clearer. Thank you.
Actually, now that we've passed the override, Joe's budget could become the default.
Right.
Absent that vote, his 5-4 recommended budget would not be the default budget. Jim?
As we move through the process, we were going to then send out what would be the final analysis. I remember clearly last year there was confusion about whose budget was what, and we are going to clarify that. It will be sent out to everyone well in advance of what we need to do and what the timeline would be on that.
Okay. Yeah, Leslie.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I was asking for the clarification of the date because I know there are lots of people out there who watch our program, and I don't want people to think this is the absolute drop-dead date. So I just needed that clear. Thank you.
Right. And we have gone later than that in the past. All right. Can I get a motion on the minutes from September 20th? Frank moves or second? The minutes? Brian seconds? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That passes. Let's see. We've lost one. That passes 12-2. All right. I'd like a motion to go into executive session to talk about labor negotiations. Moved by Jim, seconded by Frank. All in favor of moving into executive session, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right. We'll take a 5-minute break so the cameras can shut down. Please come back and...